Welcome to the Food Intelligence Podcast, where we explore the latest trends and insights shaping the future of food and beverage. I'm your host, Lee Breimer from the Tastewise marketing team. In today's episode, we're discussing one of the most buzzy topics of the year, generative AI, and specifically how AI impacts the food and beverage industry. I'm joined by Gen AI expert and co-founder of The Neuron, Pete Huang, whose AI-focused newsletter reaches over 400,000 professionals daily. I asked Pete to discuss the difference between AI and generative AI, describe the state of the market regarding Gen AI's applications in food and beverage, and give us his take on what exciting developments to look out for in the next 6 months. So whether you're an AI veteran or an anxious onlooker, you're sure to enjoy both the insights and explanations shared in this session. Happy listening. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our State of the Market webinar on generative AI. As our guest today, I'm thrilled to have a true expert in Gen AI with us, Pete Huang. Pete is the co-founder of The Neuron, a daily newsletter dedicated to the latest news about artificial intelligence. Pete, could you take a minute and share a bit about your background in Gen AI and how you got involved in such an exciting field?
Totally. Well, Lee, thanks for having me today. It's really exciting to get to touch on some of these discussion topics with you. My background stems all the way to my undergraduate studies. I studied computer science, and there we did a little bit of AI and ML work as part of the coursework, but super basic, right? Like when you start back then, it's all about, you know, can you train a computer to recognize handwritten digits, which is sort of like the AI or ML 101 exercise. And I sort of put that away, to be honest. And over the course of my career, I sort of focused more on the business value of technology. And what was really exciting towards the end of 2022, obviously with ChatGPT coming out, was all of these business leaders all of a sudden being like, okay, like, what is this? And suddenly realizing that there was some potential here to transform their business. And I definitely agree. I think we're on a very exciting path for the next few years, perhaps decade plus, unlocking this new wave of technology. And so that's why we write the Neuron, is to sort of start to cover what is actually happening. And we saw this massive explosion of research and applications, new tools, new ways that people are using these tools over the course of 2023 and into 2024, that we wanted a place to document all the things that were going on and explain to certainly the executive at a Fortune 500 or 100 company, but then also your small business owner who doesn't have the resources to go talk about this, right? All of generative AI is going to impact all those segments. And we're really excited to sort of watch all those developments unfold.
I love what you said about essentially making it accessible, right? Taking this concept, which might be a little bit foreign to maybe some of our even listeners today, although I'm pretty sure that everyone in the business sphere has at least heard of ChatGPT at this point, while there's so many countless other tools. But for our audience members who might be a little bit newer to the concept of AI, could you provide kind of a simplified explanation of what the difference between, let's say, AI and generative AI is, and maybe why it's making such waves in the tech world?
Totally. This is such a good question, because I remember back during my undergraduate studies, AI, in its whole definition, AI is essentially anything that computers can't do today, is sort of like this vaguely defined idea of AI. So as an example, like decades ago, the autopilot systems in planes was considered AI. The programs that play chess was also considered AI, right? Now, I don't think we would call that AI. I think it's more of, oh, there's a computer running it. But back then, it was seen as this otherworldly concept that a computer could be doing these things, right? So it's an always evolving definition. Now, I think we've seen certain segments and categories within AI sort of have their moments over the last 10 or 15 years. So I would say about 5 years ago, there was this big wave in computer vision. So this is largely around security-related use cases, where you would be training a computer to detect certain objects within video. These sorts of use cases, predictive maintenance on manufacturing lines, that kind of stuff. I've also seen a lot of work around optimization problems. So this is essentially just crunching a whole bunch of numbers to decide what is the optimal path to something or allocation of resources or things like that. And of course, this is something that a human could theoretically do, but computers are just way better at math than we are, that those problems are now done by ML algorithms. And then today, what we have is a lot of interest in the last couple of years around generative AI, which is these neural networks that can generate things and plainly spoken. So in the world of text, we see ChatGPT all of a sudden being able to create conversations with us and act as humans in the responses to our questions. We see this on image and video and audio, where just given a certain text prompt or an image or something like that, something very simple as an input, it can go and create these wonderfully high quality images. We're seeing high quality video now. High quality audio is coming soon as well. All of that, that creation aspect, is not something that we have seen before. And so that's what we're sort of exploring in its totality here is, well, what happens when these neural networks can actually create things? What is the impact on consumer experiences, on business workflows, on just what it means to run a business? All these sort of things start to get called into question.
Right. I think something that really stood out for me there too was the AI representing kind of completing and scaling huge amounts of analytics, tasks, things that could in theory maybe be done by someone with probably a lot of inefficiency and error. And the generative AI kind of leveraging and hinging on generating something that hasn't existed before.
Yeah, that's right. Like for a lot of these questions, right? Can you imagine this spreadsheet that a human would need in order to actually solve some of these problems? Like the number of calculator operations that they would have to do, right? And so certainly—
Sounds like a nightmare, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. So I think in general, all the business leaders that I've spoken to are very excited about the both sides of the equation, right? So certainly there are cost savings parts of the equation, which is how do we do more with less? And how do we streamline our operations or start to automate some of these things? The state of that technology sort of depending on which use case you're looking at. And then certainly on the sales and marketing side, the growth side, how do we engage with consumers? All that is changing because at the same time, this same technology is powering net new consumer experiences that even if your corporations and your well-known brands aren't leading the charge, they still have to react because we have all these new technologies, right? Like Apple Vision Pro just came out. There's going to be something weird that shows up with the Apple Vision Pro that intersects with generative AI, and all of a sudden consumers might expect something different from their the sort of established brands because of their sort of interactions with these new projects or ideas or experiences that other people have created on other medium. So all that to say, I think we're in for some pretty dramatic times, I think, in the next few years, managing, again, what's going on the business side and what does our P&L look like with generative AI? And then also, how does our branding change? How do our consumer experiences change? How do we work with consumers in the future? All that will change as well.
That's a really good segue because this is a bit general so far, but I want to kind of hone in on food and beverage. So of course, here at Tastewise, we're all about the food and beverage industry. And whether you're in the food and beverage industry or not, I think as consumers, we always connect with food experiences, with brands, with dining occasions. So I guess my question is, how does generative AI relate to the food and beverage market? And I'm wondering if you see any potential for exciting innovation in the industry.
Totally. This is a really good topic to explore. I see generally three buckets that I think are really interesting to me. One is obviously the major use case for generative AI right now is this idea of personalized marketing at scale. Mm-hmm. In that, you can see how this happens, right? Like typically speaking, you have, agencies working on behalf of brands that they take weeks to come up with assets or a campaign or something along those lines. I'm seeing agencies that are generative AI first go from first call with a client to creative assets in 6 hours, right? And this is sort of published on the website with case studies and everything. And when the cost to generate these assets and see these new ideas on paper goes down by 99.99%, you have two things, which is one, go a lot faster, obviously, in seeing your ideas come to life and experimenting with new ideas and trying things out. And then two, what you have is the ability to generate new content virtually for free. And what would normally be done to entire segments of the population at a certain time or entire audiences, you kind of start to ask yourself, well, if we can generate so much content, why not have content that's dedicated to that individual person based off of their preferences or our previous interactions with them or their demographics or whatever it might be? That is certainly possible, right? Like in the auto industry, we saw Carvana generate, I believe it was on the order of single digit millions of videos for all of their customers. Each customer got a personalized video depending on what car they bought, when they bought it, what was going on in the world at the time, where they were in the US, right? So all that starts to come into play, which is every single data point that you have now all of a sudden becomes material for these sort of generative AI powered marketing campaigns, which is super powerful. So that's number one, which is personalized marketing at scale. Now, two, I think, every sort of big corporation, big established brand has always had a problem with this big question of how do we encourage and accelerate our innovation in-house? And certainly there are, with the food industry, there are some practical concerns around how do we get something into production, manage our supply chain, things along those lines, right? But two, I think it's just the ability to see these new ideas on paper, much like we saw with the creative assets. It is simply that now we have ideas going all the time on autopilot, it seems, right? We're supercharging the human creative process internally. And the question now is, how do we get all these practical matters to catch up to what's going on in the world of these software-only ideas, right? So we talk about bits in software and then atoms in the real world, right? And so we have this dramatic expansion of our ability to innovate in the bits world. We can see new images. If we come up with a new recipe idea, we can see a visual of that almost instantly, right? Along with the sort of storytelling and the narrative around that. That is now super, super cheap with or inexpensive rather with generative AI. And now the question is, okay, how do we get the rest of our world, the atoms of the world, to sort of catch up to our ability to turn that into something real, right? So I think these two, and there's a whole bunch of other things that we could talk about that are applying to other industries as well. But these two things are really at the core. And perhaps the last one I'll mention, Lee, is again, how we interact with our consumers is changing because, again, their expectations might change. So one of the things that'll be interesting to observe over time is where exactly do chat experiences and these like talking to an AI experiences in consumer experiences lead to changing expectations in the food industry? That is sort of an open question. We don't know yet the full extent of where people do or don't want to be interacting with an AI-like chatbot, right? Certainly, it seems like people have picked up on that on the work side quite a bit. We're seeing emerging instances of that with the younger generations, especially, where they talk with personas and AI chatbots inspired by their favorite video game characters or anime characters, things like that. As you see this demographic shift change over the decades, what should the food industry be prepared for in terms of, again, navigating these new ways of interacting with consumers? All these things, I think, are open questions. It's very hard to predict the future, but we're starting to see these interesting seeds of this conversation show up.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think, like you said at the end, we don't know what the future holds, and there's so much room for innovation. Personalization is something that we've been seeing a lot in our business as well, that people want answers, they want them now, and they want that visual to come along with it. We say a data point, like an insight, is not really good enough anymore. People need to not only know what to do with it, but they need to see what it can become.
Yeah, and, absolutely. I think it definitely leads to, depending on the use case, right? If this is an internal sort of research-oriented thing, I think what we're noticing is that the previous ways of accessing information is no longer valid, perhaps, or people are starting to realize that there was a gap all along in how we typically find and browse for and analyze information. The typical thing here is Google, right? Like typically you would go and type in a few words, and which is really like a magic spell of words. And in some instances, you hope that you've chosen the right keywords. And then you're shown a long list of links to click through and to click through every single one or read which one is actually most accurate. And now what the magic of something like ChatGPT, the magic of these sort of conversational experiences is that the user is now fully in charge of directing that conversation of being like, okay, let's go here. Like, here's my starting question. Here's what I know so far. And then you sort of follow that train of thought instead of hoping and wishing that you can come up with a series of keyword spells that, sort of lead to the right page at the right time, right? It's a much more guided experience, a much more paved path for you to find that idea, right? And so I think when you put all this together, I think, again, it is about this idea of who leads here, right? And how do you lead, and how does your intent actually make it into your discovery of new ideas? I think when you put all that together, I think, we should expect some pretty dramatic change here in the future.
Some of the examples of how Tastewise is kind of bringing this into the flow for our users is we have TasteGPT as our chatbot experience. And same thing, when you type in a question, just casually, conversationally, whatever you want, it doesn't just give you an answer and say that's all. It actually follows up with follow-up questions as well. Now that you've asked, you know, for the top non-alcoholic beverage for Gen Z in Canada, like, are you interested in learning about another demographic? Are you interested in learning what other kind of diets or functional health benefits that Gen Z are looking for as well? And it kind of creates that flow of information that's really a journey that's, again, giving that user the power, giving them that choice.
Totally, totally. When I first saw TasteGPT, I'll just say this very quickly, Lee, is I felt like there was something, you know, as an outsider to the food industry, I thought that, you know, of course, like I general fascination with just like how the food industry thinks and what they care about. But I think what was interesting to me is I can fully explore like questions that would not have even come up to me, to my mind. And I just didn't know what I didn't know, right? And absent this experience that you're saying that TasteGPT can offer, I'm sort of left in the dust, right? Like if I don't even know the questions to ask, then not even Google can give me a place to go, right? But by having this sort of thing where I can start to explore the tree of conversations that's available to me, it makes it much faster for me to explore the sort of all the different ideas that are possible and adjacent ideas. And you kind of get that feeling that you're going back and forth with someone in a room. And that is a sort of like in-person jam sesh sort of energy that you have instead of you alone in a research environment, like in a library or whatever it is with no one to talk to. And it feels much more dynamic that way.
Yeah. And, we've been singing the praises. There's so much to celebrate in terms of the generative AI capabilities and so much of what we've talked about so far. But with any, you know, innovative technology, there are also the challenges that come along with it. So I'm wondering, what are maybe some of the potential hurdles of integrating generative AI into, let's say, the food and beverage market, but it could be any market? And how can businesses turn these challenges into opportunities?
So a couple of big topics here that enterprises are quite concerned about are two things. One, which is guardrails. So how do we make sure that, when AI is generating something or these chatbots are saying something, that like, how do we minimize the risk of that, right? And so I've heard so many consumer brands from every industry interested in this line of thinking, but then their legal teams, as soon as they hear of even a 0.0001% chance that a chatbot, for example, says something out of line or inappropriate, they're basically like just hard no. There is just no way we're going to accept that sort of liability. So one is just how do we correctly steer these AI-driven experiences to make sure that the risk is contained? And so largely you're seeing internal-only deployments of AI today because that's sort of one driving reason. Two, related to that, is things like hallucination, right? And in this case, like when you're deploying AI in creative capacities, hallucination, this general idea of, you know, these AI chatbots making up stuff, is actually useful in many creative processes, right? It can inspire new ideas. Again, depending on how you, like what sort of culture you set around those things. Certainly if you're looking for purely fact-driven, everything has to be 100% correct, then that's a different story, right? But if you're coming up with new ideas or new things to explore, you kind of want some room for the AI to just come up with things that you haven't thought of before, right? I think that the third thing is this idea of AI that knows your business is something that is currently unsolved right now, or a lot of companies are trying to solve this, which is you start with the idea of, okay, we love ChatGPT, for example. How do we make a ChatGPT that is very aware of all the research that we've done, all of our internal documents, all of our branding guidelines, product development guidelines, all the knowledge that our business has across the entire organization? And the process of the technology behind plugging in the ChatGPT chat and the AI model and having it absorb all that information in the organization. There are a bunch of like hairy little things there that are unsolved, and I won't go into the details, but it's things like, how do you know that you've picked the right document to sort of read and include in the chatbot's response? How many documents should you include in the first place? How do you identify the specific sort of line in that document that makes the most sense? These are very like intricate things that dramatically affect the quality outcome. And so that I think enterprises, regardless of the industry, are quite interested in solving that problem. And I haven't yet seen a clean answer that is used across the entire board, but there's certainly a lot of experimentation going on. So all these things are, I think, well acknowledged hurdles to deployment. I think the mitigating factor that enterprises should consider here are, one, just evaluating the list and roadmap of use cases that they're willing to experiment when they see certain milestones hit with the technology. So as an example, I think today it is obviously much safer to roll out a chat experience for XYZ use case and have it be internal only rather than expose it to your customers, right? So in the case of a Q&A chatbot, having it be internal only for the use case of making it easier for your own employees to find information is actually the same thing as technologically as exposing it to your customers. In the customer's case, it just becomes a customer support use case, right? Those two things are actually quite similar in terms of question and answer, but enterprises will probably go for the first one first because they have control, right? They can train their employees. They can roll it out in waves, all these different things. They won't have as much of a risk of external forces sort of chasing for ways to break that chatbot on purpose, right? And make it say bad things. And then when you sort of see certain milestones in guardrails, in safety, you know, in these sorts of advancements in those dimensions, then that's when you might consider, okay, now that that's in place and we see this in the market, then we'll consider sort of customer-facing sort of chatbots, right? So I think developing that, think about the use cases, but then don't feel like you have to go for all of them at once. Instead, form the roadmap and then things to look out for in the industry over the next few years. And then that'll form your opinion around what the actual roadmap unlocked looks like for these individual use cases.
That's some great advice and a really interesting way to kind of break down this big issue, right? Something that we've seen and that we worked really hard on when we released TasteGPT was all about data privacy too, right? If you're going to expect someone from, you know, the biggest food companies in the world to even ask a question like, you know, what dish should I create next? Or what's the trend in this category? That no other user from another company could say, tell me what someone else was thinking, or if I was someone at Nestle product development, what would I come up with? You know, so that kind of security was the first thing that we had to do before making it customer facing. And then the second aspect too is like the domain expertise about training this model, this generative kind of conversational AI, to keep those elements, the back and forth, the predictive, what's the next best question? How do I interpret what you're saying? How do I sound human? And then train it in like a closed environment on all of the food data. So, you know, today, for those of you that haven't already tried it, ask your favorite Gen AI tool online, what to cook for dinner or what recipe you should plan this weekend, it will give you an answer. Absolutely. Now that answer might not be the most up to date. It might not be able to segment the latest details, and it definitely isn't a domain expert on whatever you're looking for. So those kind of elements bring it all together, but whatever chatbot or Gen AI you're looking to use, making sure that it's that, especially in terms of implementation, which is what I want to talk about a little bit later, that implementation, it needs to check those boxes. Like, is this secure? Is this private? Does this have the security that we need? And also the expertise.
Totally. I'll just add one thing, Leo, on the second part, which is the domain expertise. That's critical. I mean, every industry is facing this, and in particular, you need to like be aware of how many companies actually are able to produce that expertise, right? Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen actually in the food industry, Tastewise is perhaps the only company that has that sort of ability to tap into that data. Everyone else is worried about their own concerns, and the people building these general models are concerned about like, it's sort of the boiling the ocean question, right? Like, there's so much data in the world. And to have a specialist come in and be like, okay, no, we only do food and we're really the experts. I've seen that produce much better outcomes in terms of the responses and ability to build for the workflow. All that gets dramatically better when you have that domain expertise. That's such a great point.
Yes. And I think it's like we said before, no one has a crystal ball, right? I think that's why both this movement around Gen AI and AI in general, it's both exciting, but it's a big question mark for a lot of people. So I'm wondering, looking ahead, what you envision for the future of generative AI. That can be in the food and beverage industry. I'd be, of course, interested to hear about that. And if there's any specific trends or developments that you find particularly exciting.
There's so many to highlight. There's one in particular that I will bring to this conversation today, which is this idea of models scaling in their, to rephrase it perhaps less technically, right now, if you go into a tool like ChatGPT or whatever model that you use, the general way it works is you have a long list of like a conversation or what a big chunk of a document or whatever it is, and then reading that model will then try to predict the next word. The number of words that you can put into that conversation history to allow it to sort of chew on that conversation history before proceeding is currently limited. And there are a number of developments that are making it possible to scale that to millions and millions and millions of words at a time instead of currently tens of thousands of words. The reason that is interesting is essentially all of that text, when you make it go to the millions of words, turns into a form of memory. And if you unlock memory, then what happens is you have the ability to, an expanded ability for what are called these AI agents, which is turning AI from a co-pilot, which is largely today how we interact with it. It's that sort of bantering back and forth, let's explore ideas together. That's a co-pilot, to an autopilot mode, which is instead of saying, what is the thing? Like, how do we explore this idea together? You start to just give it an objective. You give it a goal to achieve, and it will self-reason and think about all the different things that it needs to do in order to achieve that goal. And we've already seen AI today be able to figure out when the right moment is to call on certain tools, go do this thing in a certain place. The thing that's lacking is things like advanced reasoning and long-term memory and all these sort of things that make it untenable in an actual production environment. All these sort of things are pointing to that being possible over the next 1 or 2 years. And so that, I think, is the beginning of something completely new, right? I think that is when you get to this idea of your entire business changes, the entire, like how you lean on technology to do XYZ things completely changes from there, right? So that's the thing I'm personally excited about, because I'm, you know, again, as a impact of technology on business person, that's when we'll see the rises, you know, people start to talk about, oh, you're going to have a $1 billion company run by one person. Well, like the only way that happens is if that one person has an army of AI agents doing work for them, right? So this is the beginning of that sort of idea of what is possible. But we'll have to get back to you, to each other, Lee, and revisit this topic in a few months to see where we're at on this.
I'll take you up on that, Pete. It would be a pleasure to chat with you. It's really interesting what you say about that scalability in terms of the tens of thousands of word input to the millions of words. It's really exciting. And just to put this into the food and beverage realm for our listeners here, imagine instead of just using a tool, a Gen AI tool, to help you launch your next best product or to help market that product better, to in that question of how do I develop my next product? What product should I develop? Or how should I bring it to market? You can put in all the data of how your past launch went, what products you've launched previously, especially if this is an internal tool, your competitors' information, what products are on the market that are successful for them, any sales digits, market insights and data, and all of that being analyzed to then make that output of what product should I develop next, so much more enriched and valuable. So I think that that's just to bring it to food and beverage. I think that the implications here are massive, especially when it comes to that personalization and that powerful insight and turning that into that the next step for your business. I'm curious. I think that what I'd like to hear from you is a bit of a wrap up in the sense of for those that are listening today, if they're just starting to incorporate AI and they're just starting to bring it into their businesses, what are some kind of practical advice, pieces of advice you would offer to them?
I typically go to two things, which is one, you always have to start with the problem that you are solving. And it sounds like, in fact, both of these pieces of advice will sound way too simplistic. The reason why I say it is that you'll be surprised how many teams are out there doing the exact opposite of these two things, despite knowing that these two things are like the best way to do it. So number one, you have to start with the problems. I'm hearing too many teams start with, we need to be doing AI because XYZ reason. Maybe our competitor is doing AI, or there has to be some way to figure out AI here. And they lose sight of the problem, which is like, what are we actually doing here? Like, what is the actual impact to our cost basis or our workflow or our customers that is uniquely enabled by this technology, right? So start with that and make sure that you always start your conversations, your use case planning, whatever it might be around this thing. The second thing I would say is don't rush. Sometimes the things that you are, well, to step back, we just have so much hype around generative AI right now. And oftentimes the excitement leads to way overblown expectations for what the technology can do. So you're starting to see these executives just say these outlandish things that they're very, very convinced that generative AI can do and it cannot. And, will those things come? Absolutely. Like some of these ideas are probably ready in the next 1 to 3 years, but it's not there yet today. And so I think just having a very clear view of like, all right, what the roadmap is, again, like what can the technology do today? What are the problems that we can solve with it? And starting with those is really important. And for the rest of them, doing nothing right now is a totally okay move. And when you have your executives sort of, again, claiming these things that we should be doing X, it's like, okay, not yet. You know what I mean? Like, I love the energy, but it's just not there yet. And therefore waiting is totally fine. And observing to see what else is going on in the market is totally okay. Because what will happen is new products are going to come, new techniques are going to develop, the research is going to get better, right? All these things will change such that you don't want to be investing in something now that is, again, totally impossible, where 9 months from now, you're going to have a much cleaner answer. You should be looking into that, right? I think generally the spirit of looking into AI is completely correct. It just, again, you have to be very sort of grounded in the actual deployment of these things. And again, lean on your, as I mentioned earlier, lean on your domain experts, the ones who have worked with many other companies and have seen this deployment go live. Start with that, right? And lean on their guidance to figure out the best deployment for you.
That's fantastic. I think something too here is like, you can have that speed and you can have that scale with AI technology, which is really exciting. But if you don't know what you're actually going to use that technology, that speed, that scale to answer for you, then you've set off on the wrong foot to begin with.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Pete, and sharing your insights, your expertise. It's truly, truly valuable. And for those listeners out there that want to learn more about AI, generative AI, make sure to follow and subscribe to The Neuron at theneurondaily.com and to follow Pete online, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. He has a great presence there, and make sure to stay informed, stay curious, and keep trying to cook up those brilliant AI ideas.
Thanks so much for having me, Lee. I hope everyone had a great time with this session.
I know I did.